Welcome to the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast. This week, Bernie Corbett spoke to the associate head coach of the Quinnipiac University Bobcats, Joe Dumais, about the team's third straight Connecticut Ice Championship. Later, Bernie also spoke to Margot Norad, freshman standout from Brown, who went viral this past weekend after scoring the infamous Michigan goal against Quinnipiac en route to beating the number 8 Bobcats. You're not going to want to miss it. Thank you so much for tuning in. Bernie, take it away. Well, welcome back, everyone, to this week's edition of Inside ECAC Hockey. Bernie Corbett pleased to be joined this week by the associate head coach on the men's side here for the Quinnipiac Bobcats, Joe Dumais. Joe, welcome to the show, and great to have you joining us to talk some hockey this week.
Thanks for having me, Bernie. Appreciate it. Looking forward to this.
Joe, your tenure with Quinnipiac has been, well, I guess kind of a mirror image as an associate head coach of the time that you spent at Union. I mean, you know, once again, if there's a common denominator to success in the ECAC, I think you might be it. National championships now at each school, and I'll let you take a little bit of a victory lap there, the fact that you've been involved with a couple of programs that have been very successful in the ECAC.
Yeah, I mean, I've been obviously fortunate to be surrounded by some good players and good coaches. When I first got to Union, I mean, those teams were excellent. I think it was the third season I was there that we won the national championship. But my first and second year, arguably, those two teams could have been even better than the team that won it. It was just a great run that Union had. And obviously, Rick Bennett was a big part of that. And Jason Tapp, a BU guy. And then, you know, Benny Barr and Nate Lehman had their hands all over it, too. So, obviously, you know, I was fortunate enough to be there, but I think there's a lot of people that were behind the scenes that had a part in it. And then I think at the end of the day, players win games. And, you know, Matt Bodie and Shane Gosper and Dan Carr, they were just incredible players. But more importantly, the leadership of that group was just unmatched. And I usually say this to a lot of people. They're like, hey, what's the common denominator between, you know, 2014 with Union and 2023 with Quinnipiac? And I just say it's the leaders. And in 2014, those guys ran the team. And we didn't have, as coaches, we didn't have to deal with week to week, you know, punishing guys, disciplining guys. That just didn't happen. The captains, the leaders took care of that. And last year was the same thing. You know, Zach Metza and that really that whole crew of leadership, they took care of everything. There was times when we didn't even know this. Our guys got up at 6 a.m. and they were running the hill at Quinnipiac. And we found out a week or two later what happened. They're like, oh, somebody, you know, wore the wrong T-shirt to a team meal. And we're like, OK, you know, they just took care of that. We didn't have to deal with disciplining our guys. It was just we coached them, you know, we showed video, we did skill work and all the other stuff. It was just run by the guys and they were incredible. So I think the biggest common denominator is having that leadership of the players running the team and not having the coaches having to talk to the players all the time about discipline, about bad penalties, about, you know, being late for something, about not working hard, not practicing, whatever it may be. Those were two really special groups.
Well, indeed. And a really big weight off the shoulders of the coaches when you have a core group and you have a leadership group. Some teams say they have a leadership group, council, whatever it happens to be, that you can lean on. And it sounds like that you really had that last year all the way to that dramatic national championship overtime win. Well, that brings us to this year. And currently the body of work, as I, you know, being a Giants fan way back, Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are. The record says you're 17-6-2 right now in the aftermath of a national championship. You're 10-2-1 in ECAC play. The two was fairly recently, and you got back up and at it last weekend after stumbling recently, just a couple of weeks back. But as this team has come together, Joe, you know what a national championship caliber, you just articulated what it looks like. What about the identity of this year's team as they hit the stretch run on the most important play?
Yeah, so I think coming into this year, we lost so many of that leadership group, you know, whether it was the fifth years or the seniors. that we just had a lot of new guys that had to fill new roles. And then we had a lot, you know, we had 10 new guys coming in. And so they kind of had to adapt. And I'll be honest, I think we're still going through just feeling out what everybody is, who everybody is, how we need to play still. It's still a week by week thing for our guys. And we have a great group. I mean, you know, in the classroom, we're phenomenal. Like, you know, every day of practice, they're a pleasure to coach. And it's just a matter of being more consistent. So I think that's our big thing. We're up, we're down, we're kind of all over the map, but we're trying to build for the end of the season. And I think we're on the right track. We know what makes our team successful, and we know where we've struggled this year. Definitely one of the areas we struggle. If you look at our record in overtime, we've been bad at overtime. And, you know, thankfully when you get to the NCAA tournament and the ECAC playoffs, there's no 3-on-3. So I think that's an advantage for us is 3-on-3 in the years past has been good to us. And this year it has not been good to us. So that's a big thing, but then it goes a step further. It's, you know, how do we manage games better? How do we close games? If we're up by a goal, obviously, you were at that BU game, you know, we're up by two goals in the third period and we just didn't manage it well. They're obviously a great team, and, you know, it was one of those things where we got to learn how to close that game, whether it's 2-1 or it's 3-1 or whatever it may be. We got to learn how to close that game. And that's kind of the area we've been struggling with that we're starting to get better. And we did that against UConn on Saturday night.
And at your position, associate head coach, and obviously a very strong hand, influence, impactful with the recruiting, things have really changed. As I talk to guys that are in the position that you're in, there's recruiting, there's traditional recruiting, if you say. Now there's the presence of the transfer portal. Now there's a situation where you might be recruiting a guy, and then you might be recruiting him again 2 years later. You might not have got him. Now you got a second chance with him. I mean, there's really kind of a unique, kind of an odd dynamic that's going on right now in your role in terms of overall team building, Joe.
It's actually crazy. It really is. And I'm sure most people.
Sorry to bring it up.
No, it's the biggest topic in not just hockey, but all of sport, all of college sports, right? You know, there's so many different dynamics and layers to recruiting with NIL money, with just transfer portal, all of that stuff. And I think for us, you know, we're constantly trying to adapt to the times. You know, I think there's a lot of people that bitch and complain about the new rules and where college sports is going. And to be honest, I don't love where everything's going, but you got to figure out a way to adapt, and you got to figure out a way that it can benefit your school. And that's what we've tried to do. And, you know, for us, not every team can do this. You know, the Ivies, unfortunately, don't have that advantage, but we can get transfers here, and we're a destination because we are a good school. We have a nice rank. We have a winning record, you know, a track record of winning. And we also have really good grad programs. So that's been our big thing, is we're trying to attract really good transfers to our school in our hockey program. And I think it's been very beneficial if you look over the last 4 years. And so that's been a huge thing for us. We're like, we got to take advantage of this because we can do it. And then there's a lot of schools that can't, or there's some schools that don't have grad programs, or maybe they don't have good grad programs, or everything kids are trying to look for. So we feel like we have all that stuff.
No question. You've got all those elements here. You mentioned about the presence of transfers. I watched Vinny DuPlessis, obviously at BU up close, saw all the games that he played at BU, was impressed with him on so many levels, particularly the intangible level that he brings. I mean, some guys just can win, and they've got kind of win aura about them. And he had that at BU the very first game. You probably know that he played at BU. BC was number one in the country during the COVID year. And he just steps in, you know, ho-hum. I think he kicked out 40 and beat BC in his first study ever. You know, okay, that was a lot of fun. And I, when he went to Quinnipiac, I said, man, I think that was a good get for you. And he really has filled a pretty big void there at that position over the course of the year.
Yeah, Vinny's been excellent for us. And I still think he's coming along. Like, he had a big weekend for us. He played both games. He was great both nights. I still think he's getting better. But he just, when he gets in a game, he's so confident and the coaches and players are so confident in him. No matter if he's up or down in between, maybe he just let in a bad goal. It doesn't matter. He has a very good swagger and confidence about him that you feel good as a coach and as a player. So he's a pleasure to be around. And he's just a guy that comes in. He works hard every day in the weight room, on the ice. And, you know, he's definitely getting rewarded for it. And, you know, at BU it was tough because Commesso's such a good goalie. He's a high draft pick. So, you know, he just kind of got stuck behind him a lot, but he was a good goalie at BU. And unfortunately he just didn't play as much. And now he's playing a lot for us and he's been excellent.
He certainly has. And the look of your team with and without Colin Graf, you hate to find out. Sometimes you find out the hard way what your team looks like when you don't have the guy. He is certainly the guy. I've been so impressed with him over the course of his career. And once again, stepping right back to be the stem winder of your offense.
Yeah, he's a special player. I mean, these guys don't come around too often in college hockey. He's just a phenomenal kid. He's a great student. And obviously, he's a great hockey player. He's got the whole package. He comes from an awesome family. And, you know, when he got hurt a few times this year, and it was one of those things where it was, you know, we were bummed out as coaches because we felt we could have won some games with him. But I think as a team, it was really good for us because guys had to step up. Guys had to play in different roles. Even the first game against Boston College, I mean, I think he was gone 3 minutes into the game. And
yep, that's right.
You know, we worked all September on our power play with Colin Graf, and then he's gone. Yep. And 5 minutes yep. later, I think Sam Lipkin was gone too. So, like, having Colin Graf out, I think actually helped a lot of guys in the sense where they had to step up and be leaders. They had to get more minutes. Like, our freshmen really had to get more time that they probably wouldn't have got if Colin Graf was in the lineup. But we also realized we're a different team without him. You know, we just weren't as dynamic. And I think we went 0-for-5 against BC on the power play, which was disappointing. But then as soon as he came back, it was just a different confidence level for our whole team. And he's the guy that can get us, just like last year, he's a guy that can get us to the NCAA tournament in the Frozen Four. And anytime he's in the lineup, we have a chance to win. And, you know, he has the chance to be a difference maker every shift.
And for the D-Corps, and anytime I'm talking to coaches, the toughest thing in college hockey, find six guys that you can trust and then let them play. And you mentioned about some of the guys that you had in the leadership group, guys like Metsa. What kind of a perspective can you give insight on where your D-Corps is right now, what some of the expectations were for guys filling new roles at the beginning of the year as opposed to where you're now as we get ready to turn to February?
Yeah, so Jaden Lee is our captain, and he was a huge part of last year.
Yes.
Played a ton of minutes. He played over 20 minutes every night, offensively, defensively. He did everything for us. And so, you know, his role was obviously dramatically stepped up this year with Zach Metzel leaving. And he's done a great job, like, stat-wise. He's doing great offensively. And if you do watch him day in and day out, you know, he's not the biggest kid, but he's one of the best defenders in college hockey because his skating is elite and his stick is just incredible. And I kind of use Devon Taves. I think Devon Taves is one of the best. He might have the best defensive stick in the NHL, in my opinion. And that's the kind of stick that Jaden Lee has in college hockey. He can break up so many plays. He can break up so many shots on goal. And so he's been phenomenal for us. And then Avari Rassinen is the second guy that has really stepped up in a leadership role and playing as well. And he's more of a defensive guy for us. But I think just overall, he brings a calmness to our back end where when he's out there, you know, he's going to defend, you know, he's going to move pucks, he's going to block shots. So those two guys have been huge for us this year. And we look to continue to lean on those guys as the year goes on.
It was a big bounce back, a great response from a tough weekend in central New York there. You had two tight losses, one in overtime, 2-1 to Colgate, and then 3-2 against Cornell, which has become a big rivalry in the ECAC with you and the Big Red. But you go back, and Coach Parker, who let me hang around with him for about four decades, he used to talk about the bean pot, and he'd say, an opportunity for instant gratification, which is a rarity. But, you know, he didn't know how prophetic he was now that we live in the age of instant gratification and social media. But that Connecticut Ice Tournament now has become a focal point for the four Connecticut schools. It's kind of the, you know, bean pot south, and really an opportunity for you to claim a trophy, play in front of some great crowds, and have a really good weekend of hockey. You had to, you know, fight hard against Yale in a very tight one-shot game. And then similar circumstances coming from behind against UConn. So some real growth moments I would expect there for your program to be able to get that trophy and bring it back.
Yeah, so as far as Quinnipiac goes, from our coaches to our players, we look forward to that tournament every year. We think it's amazing. Obviously, we want to win the trophy. Like, anytime there's a trophy on the line, I think it's just a different element. We also use it as a springboard for, like, if you're going to go to the ECAC finals, the Final Four, or the Frozen Four, the NCAA tournament, you have to be able to win a big game, you know, under pressure. And then you got to turn around and reload and play another team the next night. Yep. And do a different pre-scout and all that. So we take it as our, you know, kind of our before the NCAA tournament, before the ECAC, is like, hey, this is what it's going to take to win at the end of the year. So we put a lot of stake into this tournament. And you know, we've been fortunate to win it the last 3 years, but I think as a state of Connecticut, I think it's an amazing event. We're only on year four. So obviously it's not the bean pot. We have a long ways to go. We're not trying to be the bean pot, but we do want to start something special. And I think we do have that. You know, COVID derailed it a little bit, and now yep. I think it's back. And I believe we had about 7,000 people for that UConn game, but just the atmosphere was excellent. The intensity in the games by all four teams was awesome. It's just a special event that I think in 10, 20, 30 years, we're going to look back on and be like, this is awesome. And we were a part of when we first started it, you know, 4 years ago. And so we just want to keep growing this event. I know it's going to be at Sacred Heart next year, and I believe the Yale the year after. And then, you know, there's talk about hosting it at Bridgeport every year, or Excel Center every year, which, hey, like, we got to make that decision. But either way, however we decide to do it, I think it's a really cool event that we hosted last year, and it was a home run at our rink. We sold out at both games. Yeah, so for us, I don't think we played our best. UConn played excellent against us, and you know, we struggled defensively in that game, but somehow we found a way to come back down 3-1, and we won that game, which is a huge confidence boost for our team going into this weekend.
As we wrap up here, I just got to reference the fact that I've got somebody that I'm speaking to, comes from Auburn, Maine, down to Quinnipiac. Do you ever think about the fact that I was looking back doing my homework to get ready? You played in the MAC. You played 2 years in the Atlantic, and you played your last year at the ECAC. Do you ever look around and say, wow, look at what happened down here in Hamden, Connecticut? I mean, it's a true phenomenon what Rand has built, and what the whole, and I say phenomenon of Quinnipiac hockey has become. I mean, who better than you that played in three different leagues during your college career before you graduated?
You know what? It was crazy. You know, just looking back, I've been a part of not the early days, but I have been a part of when we did play at Northford Ice Pavilion. It's a youth hockey rink. And to see what we did last year, but, you know, obviously over the last 10, 15 years, what we've built is what Rand's built is pretty remarkable. But when I first yep. got here, I was just looking to play Division I hockey against University of Maine and BC, BU and Michigan. And, you know, I knew we were playing in a youth rink, and, you know, our league wasn't great, but I also, being a Maine guy, knew we were playing the University of Maine my freshman year. And that was amazing. And then I knew we were going to Michigan my yep. sophomore year. And so that's yep. what it was all about. Never did I think that all of a sudden we'd have a new rink, and all of a sudden we'd be in the ECAC. And the next thing you know, we'd be, you know, and it wasn't just last year. I mean, we were in the finals in 13. We were in the finals in 16. Sure. And so just to think where the program has come from, the days when I was driving to it, we all had to drive for practice to a youth rink. And it you know, when you look back at it, it was actually terrible. We played there and practiced there, and there was no weight room. There was no lounge. There was no nothing, but we all loved hockey. And that's what it was about. And so now to see what this program's become is pretty cool to be proud of, or to be a part of, and definitely proud of.
No question. And next up, it's always next up when I'm talking to coaches, it's looking ahead, Harvard and Dartmouth will be coming down to Hampden. You've had forged a pretty good rivalry with both of those programs, and your thoughts, I know one at a time, but your thoughts on the weekend and the challenge you're facing those two Ivy League opponents.
Yeah, so we play Harvard first, and us and Harvard, we feel like have been the top two teams, or top four teams, I would say, in our league for a while now. And we've always had excellent games. You know, they're super talented and well-coached. Our guys look forward to playing Harvard, you know, because they're good, because of the name, and because they have a lot of NHL guys. And so it's going to be a great game. Obviously, they're down a little bit this year. It's kind of expected in the sense where five guys left, and I think four of the five have played NHL games, and a few of them are regulars. So they were loaded last year, and they have a really, I believe they're one of the youngest teams in college hockey this year. They're playing better. They have a big time power play right now. So we know we're in for a game. And then Dartmouth, you know, I played with Reed Cashman here at Quinnipiac. Reed coached here. He coached with Rand. So there's just a lot of connections between us and Dartmouth, and he's doing a great job. And, you know, I watched their game against Cornell, which was a phenomenal up and down game, and Dartmouth ended up winning in a shootout. So again, anytime you get in league play, like, points are so big and so hard. And, you know, you saw that game last night with Northeastern and BU, how tight that was. And we expect the same thing with Harvard and Dartmouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to the weekend, and with the trophy back for the Connecticut Ice Tournament, and more to look forward to down the stretch. Joe, thanks very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have an opportunity to talk hockey.
All right. Thanks, Bernie. Take care.
Joe Dumais, our guest here on the men's side this week for Inside ECAC Hockey, Associate Head Coach for the Quinnipiac Bobcats. Pleased to be joined this week. We have a player profile this week from Brown University. She is a freshman out of Glencoe, Illinois, and made some headlines recently. And I will say, a true Renaissance woman, because the whole story isn't the lead story, which is what she accomplished last weekend. But we're very happy to have with us Margot Norhead. Margot, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Hi, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Margot, I guess, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't start at the end, if you will, at the most recent. A rather impactful hockey moment. I believe it is the second time documented on the women's side. I went back and I looked at the tape of, I don't know if we're going to try to pronounce Nella Lapa-Simonova from Slovakia. You're probably familiar with her. Did it on the women's side. It looked like it was against Sweden, and by Slovakian, it was a little rusty. But I did watch the tape of her doing it in a women's game. It looked like it was an international game, tournament game. You may know more than I do on that. But we're talking about, you know, the lacrosse goal, the Michigan goal. I'm old enough to remember, because I'm old, Mike Legg in 1996 from Michigan first performed it. He did it in an NCAA tournament game. And since then, just to put a little historical perspective before you tell your story, there is only, I believe, documented 10 NHL players that have performed successfully the lacrosse goal, the Michigan goal, which now I think we should probably rename the Brown goal in your honor, Margot. If you take us through circumstances and the surroundings, the implication, it turned out to be a game winner against eighth-ranked Quinnipiac, and the fact that, I guess, from my research, was something that wasn't really premeditated, I guess, on your part until you kind of get into the flow of the game at that juncture.
Yeah, so Gally Levy, she scored us a great goal, the first goal, which I think really picked up our momentum. I thought we were dominating that entire game. And then the Quinnipiac didn't have the greatest change, so I just kind of took advantage of that. And Cameron Sickage gave me a great pass in the neutral zone, and I just took it in. And I was thinking to myself, if I could beat the D wide, I'm going to try this. And as I went behind the net, and then I just scooped the puck up. And before I knew it, I was going through the love line.
And there was a lot of love in the love line there after someone, you're talking about igniting a team and a highlight reel moment. such as it is. And, once again, it was so rather spontaneous. It really wasn't, always wondered about the clock in the head of the athlete when they're out there and what makes them tick and what makes them who they are and put them in a certain situation. But you really weren't thinking about it until, well, maybe I get a little bit of space here. I create a little bit of space and go wide. And, you watch the tape and you turn the net. And then all of a sudden you were you're scooping the puck up. You really hadn't practiced that a lot. It's not something that, hey, at the end of practice, I'm going to work on a couple of things that a lot of players do, face-offs, whatever it happens to be. But that wasn't something you really worked on a lot, though.
I never did it in practice, no. I would do it. I would go out by myself when we would have, open ice skills. I would just go out there and I would try to do 20 Michigans in a row and obviously work on other skills. But at the end of my skills, I would just, hey, I'm just going to finish off with 10, 20 Michigans just to – test my skills.
Well, I'm going to give you an A. I think you passed the test. The fact that you could do it under game conditions. So that was part of your skill, your post-practice skill package there in terms of being able to work on it and being able to employ it at that time. Now, as far as the fact that, hey, I'm going to work, work on face-offs. I'm going to work on my edges. I'm going to work on whatever. In this case, I'm going to work, as you said, I'm going to work on my Michigans. But your awareness of the goal itself, when were you first aware of it? Did you, I was 12 years old. I saw the tape of Mike Legg when he first did it, but just your own personal awareness, I'm curious about.
Honestly, as soon as Connor Bedard did it, I'm a huge fan of Connor Bedard. As soon as he did it kind of came into my head. My grandfather has been telling me a lot of times, so, hey, you should try this in a game. You should try this in a game. So I decided I'd listen to him and try it in a game. It just worked out in my favor.
And that was, I usually ask, the guests about if they have an NHL idol or somebody that they really look to. Oftentimes I'll ask them, do you look to take anything from their game? Well, I guess you're the poster child for it now, taking something from somebody's game. You actually extracted that from Connor Bedard's game when you saw Connor Bedard do it in the NHL. So at no more sincere form of flattery than that for what you do to Connor Bedard in that situation.
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny, though. My coach, Mel Ruzzi, she actually sent me a clip of someone on the UConn men's team doing the Michigan the night before I did it. So once she sent me that, I watched it a few times and I was like, oh, I could try that in a game. So the next day I did it.
Oh, there was right from the night before. So the power of persuasion there. Okay.
Yeah. For sure.
It happened in the UConn. UConn was playing in the tournament at the XL, the Connecticut Ice Tournament. So there you go. So, well, you have the practical application right away with what you were able to do. And any famous people that have, shot into that phone of yours, a text or a call or a message, anything you want to recall this week that you might have heard from somebody? Wow, I just heard from fill in the blank from the NHL or anything.
I mean, a few guys on the USA men's development team, they've reached out, which is really awesome just to get that recognition from that skill of players. But no, that's about it.
Yeah, which is someone should get to Connor Bedard and say, yeah, you get a pat on the back from Connor Bedard there,
That'd be a dream to hear from him, but he's pretty busy.
Well, yeah, exactly. Absolutely. We'll get Chris over there at the Brown Hockey. I know Chris over in Sports Information. He should be reaching out to the Chicago Blackhawks on your behalf, to get a little tip of the hat there, But the fact that it worked out, but not only did it work out, but the game itself, just to give us the perspective, Brown team, we talked to Mel, I guess it was going back, it was a few weeks ago, about the team. But Quinnipiac, a perennial contender for ECAC honors, the number 8 team in the country. I mean, this was a huge moment for the moment, but huge for the Brown program. 4-1 igniting and propelling to a 4-1 victory over Quinnipiac. Something to really build on down the stretch here for your club.
Right. This was definitely a big statement. I think our Princeton-Quinnipiac weekend this past weekend was a huge, just a huge point in our season. We've had a lot of ups and downs, but I think we really made a big statement this past weekend, and we're just looking to build from here and just keep making a statement because we are turning into that organization that's getting closer to the top.
Absolutely. And when you say closer to the top in the ECAC, the uber competitive ECAC, that's quite a statement. You're new to the league as a freshman, as a first year player, but your thoughts, your impressions of this league. And I mean, man, it's just so tough. I mean, you look week in and week out, you look at the national poll and it's just dotted up and down with ECAC teams. It really is. I mean, the on any given weekend, you're going to be facing a formidable opponent and probably a nationally ranked opponent.
Yeah, ECAC is, in my opinion, I think the most competitive league in the NCAA women's side. But I think it's amazing how much I can just see our growth in practice and games. Every single game, we're getting better, better. Our chemistry is really building as a team. And our leadership is great. The leadership on our team is what makes us successful to this point. And I hope to just keep building off of that.
Your school selection, you came out of the, I believe Glencoe is suburban Chicago. Yep. And yeah. I've been to Chicago a lot, so I've got some familiarity with the area. But overall, four-time state champion, Chicago Mission program is well known in the club nationals for four times. Also, not surprisingly, with Ivy League pedigree, four-time honor roll student. Your decision to come to Brown and what went into it? What were some of the important points that brought you to the great state of Rhode Island, to the Ocean State?
Yeah, ever since I went to Mission and I started getting, I started to work harder towards going the Division I level, I always had my mind set on an Ivy League school, and Brown was at the top of it. And I was just fortunate that Coach Mel picked me up. And as soon as I stepped on this campus, I thought it was beautiful. I loved everything about it. I love the atmosphere. I love the team. The coaching staff is a huge part of why I came here. It's something you don't see every day. So I'm just very fortunate to be here.
That's great. It was kind of a love at first sight there. You thought, hey, this is the place to be.
Yes, for sure.
Absolutely. It was probably the great work my father did on the trees back in 1950. I think that probably was the deciding factor.
Exactly.
As we talked about earlier. I got to ask you too, with our Slovakian friend there, Nella, has anybody got you in touch with Nella? Maybe certain comfort level that you've enjoyed.
Yeah, I think the decision-making was definitely the main adjustment, I'd say. Like the time I have with the puck, it's a much faster game than AAA. And it took me a while to get adjusted, I'd say a few games. And then once I got the first goal under my belt, it all kind of came together and I felt more confident, more comfortable on the ice.
At Brown, you got a little bit of time for a concentration or a major. But I believe that you're leaning towards biology. Is medicine something that you do you have an interest in?
Yes, for sure. I've always, ever since I went to an orthopedic surgeon a while back, I went to my dad and I'm like, hey, I want to be an orthopedic surgeon when I'm older. He's like, okay, that's a lot of schooling. I'm like, yeah, I can handle it. But now getting older, seeing what they really do, I'm not sure I could handle all that.
Okay. It looks a little daunting to you at this point.
Yeah, I'm not much of a looking at blood, stuff like that.
Uh-oh. Okay. Yeah, that could be a potential stumbling block then. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I'd say I'm really interested in like nutrition and exercise science. So that's something I would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe more in kinesiology in that area.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very, very good. And well, I've kind of saved, I think, the most fascinating for last. And I think you know what I'm going to talk about now. When I kind of peeled the onion of the biography of being able to talk to you today, you're an accomplished, beyond accomplished violinist. It's one of these prodigy things. You began at age 3. So you've invested roughly, who's counting, 16 years has been invested into the violin. How did you start at such an early age? Is there a really accomplished music background in your family?
Yeah, so my mom's a professional pianist. She's been nominated for several Grammys. So she's herself and my grandparents got me into violin. And since then, I've been taking lessons from the same teacher, Mrs. Haig, Betty Haig. And she turned into my third grandma. I love her. She's been
great.
One of the greatest mentors I've ever had. So she's taught me a lot. And it's just really, I'm really fortunate to be able to have both hockey and violin in my life.
That's quite an accomplishment. True. That gets thrown around. People talk about Renaissance people, Renaissance man, Renaissance woman. You really are a Renaissance woman. When you can talk about, well, you know, I can ho-hum. Yeah, I can pull the Michigan goal, and I can also, you know, play violin. And we want to say, Betty Haig, 92 years young, by the way, that you work with.
Oh, yes.
Your third grandma. God bless her. Part of her academy. And, by the way, you've toured Europe playing the violin, and you played Carnegie Hall in New York. I mean, my goodness, that's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You know the old joke about Carnegie Hall, don't you?
No.
No? You know, people, you know, the guy walking down the street in New York, and he walks up and asks for directions. He says, excuse me, sir, could you tell me how to get to Carnegie Hall? You know what the answer is? Practice.
Oh, a good one.
same as working on the Michigan goal during the open skills, you know?
Exactly.
Similar phenomenon. But I got to ask you, as far as about the violin and your experience there, I mean, I just got to say, I'm gushing as a fan here. What was it like to play Carnegie Hall? Did you know what the implications, the ramifications, and the impact of playing Carnegie Hall, about how special that is? I mean, that is the go-to destination for literally everybody in music.
Honestly, I just took in that moment. I was just so blessed to be there, and it was an unreal experience that you only get to experience once in your life, and it's just mind-blowing that I got to experience it
and get to tour Europe also, Margo. Where did you go in Europe? Did you hit all major cities in Europe?
Yeah, we went to Frankfurt and that was a long time ago. I'm kind of blanking on it.
Okay.
But I also went to Lisbon, Portugal. So that was great as well.
Well, and you're 19.
Yes.
19, a long way to go too. And already with the your accomplishments and achievements, I mean, you've made me feel completely inadequate. I want to thank you for that. I'm probably going to go back to bed and call my therapist, maybe not in that order. After this interview today, just absolutely amazing accomplishment on and off the ice. And no question. And speaking of on the ice, you'll be back on the ice this weekend. Next up, Union and RPI will be traveling up to the Capital District. Your thoughts on getting ready for that challenge?
Yeah, I mean, we're pumped. We're pumped to finish the season. We're pumped to play every single game. And what I love about this team is that we have such a hard work ethic, and we have such a drive to compete every single practice, every single game. And we just want each other to be successful and work hard. And I think we're really dialed in for this weekend against Union and RPI.
Okay, and we might as well do a plug here. Is there any openings at the Betty Haig Academy? If there's any aspiring violinists in the Chicago suburban area? Should they call Betty Haig? Is she taking on any new clients?
I mean, I could ask her if you want. I'm not too sure right now. If you're interested, if you're interested, I could arrange.
Margo can hook it up. I trust that you could. And my final question, we've had, you know, I've broadcast the games for Boston University for the men's program for close to four decades now. Hard to believe with my boyish good looks, though, Margo. But nevertheless, it's been a long time. Guys have made the Sports Center. We had a guy, a Swedish player, Wilmer Skoog, who had a couple of Michigan goals during his career, recently graduated last year. He'd made it. But you were number one. I mean, you know, what was that like to find out? Yeah, I made ESPN. Oh, I'm number one on ESPN Sports Center. My gosh, I'm trending. I mean, that experience for you, that must have been a little bit of a mind-blowing experience for you, though, this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the day I did it, Coach Mel was like, you realize that's going to go viral, right? And I was like, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see about that. I wake up the next morning and I look at my phone and everything just kind of goes viral. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. I was speechless. Honestly, the support that I've been getting over the past couple of days is outrageous. And I'm really blessed to be able to be a part of this.
Absolutely the case. Well, we're talking to somebody here today as we wrap up. She's got options. She's got hockey. She's got biology, probably, and that'll loom large for her. And she also has the violin. So there's been an awful lot that you put on that resume in a scant 19 years, Margo. And pleasure to talk to you here today. And all the best going forward with your team and with you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Margo Norhead, our guest, and coming up here inside ECAC hockey on the women's side. And well, if you don't know, check it out. And she said, it has gone viral. You can check out the Michigan goal, which is now going to officially be named the Brown goal in honor of Margo. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast. Follow ECAC Hockey across all social media platforms. And thank you to the coaches and players for coming on the podcast every week. This has been the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast, hosted by Bernie Corbett.